This is the CC Radio Podcast.
Welcome to episode 279 of the Countdown Podcast. We are two fools talking about movies. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. We can tell Wayne put a lot of effort into that opener this week.
I was just flying off the cuff and shit, man. What's up?
Wouldn't I think quick. He's confused because in the graphic he put together for last week's show, he called that one episode 279.
Yeah, in fact, this is episode 279. It was a bad day.
Fair enough. My name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast with Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. In today's topic, here's one that we thought we might have some fun with.
That's right.
What are we doing?
Top 10 movies that fooled us. And that's actually throwing back to my initial, two fools talking movies. Huh? You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
so there was a little bit of fucking work going on. There's a bit of work.
That's right.
I was fooled.
Oh, shit! We're in jokeception.
That's as good as it gets. Good night.
There you go. We out. I forgot what I was saying, but please go on.
The top 10 films that fooled us.
Yes, top 10 films that fooled us.
Exactly. So, or movies that fooled us. In other words, films where we went,
oh, shit. Didn't see that coming. Didn't I see it coming?
Oh, yeah.
Various worse than sounds like that.
Exactly. So there will be some plot twists. We did have a discussion. We done plot twists a long time ago.
Yeah.
We did have a discussion.
I forgot that we did, but okay.
would we include plot twists? And we decided that we would because some of those moments are just...
Those are the things that surprise you. Stellar. Exactly. That's it.
About half my list aren't the plot twist at the end of the film, so we've got a bit of all over the shop action for
that's
you
right.
today. It's going to be a real fun one, I reckon, and not just because I haven't eaten anything today whilst drinking.
Yeah, Paul might be slightly fingered after a long fast, and he just didn't get time to eat today before coming over.
I ran instead.
He ran. See, he even fucking expended calories and shit, and now he's drinking. Motherfucker's fucked up.
Anyway, that's my excuses for my behavior and B, my list. Let's get into the first segment proper in a segment that we call The Recount.
Who wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
Who
wants a recount?
The Recount is where we talk about shit that came in during the week, Paul. What is up?
Well, we didn't have a vote this week because last week was the top 10 last time.
That's right.
Back in lockdown edition. So no comparing or contrasting our list this particular time. Instead, I asked people, what was the film they were most likely to want to check out after last week's show? Here's the responses then in the Facebook listener community link in the show notes with three votes, Force of Nature. Because apparently I can't type Force. Was it Force of Nature or Forces of Nature? Can't remember.
It's Forces of Nature. Force of Nature was the Ben Affleck one.
Right. Anyway. I'm pretty sure people understood where we were coming from. Uh-huh. Three whole votes, Wayne. Now, here was the rub. We walked in slightly late to see a screen this week. We're coming up this weekend, our review of Unhinged.
Mm-hmm.
And we just saw the back end of the last trailer.
Yeah.
Which was Forces of Nature.
It's incredible.
It's coming out in the cinemas in Australia.
Right. We already reviewed it off the cuff, maybe a little, in a top 10 show.
At best.
I thought it was VOD straight up.
Because it's that level of quality. Unbelievable. Anyway, don't bother. Anyway,
it's not that bad, guys. It's not that bad. Okay.
My number one, next with four votes, The Outpost, which was added by one of our listeners, Mina.
Nice.
And then your number one was 7,500. The Joseph Gordon-Levitt thriller with nine votes. And then by a country mile, 32 votes for Palm Springs, which is the film that you slated and I... went to all the trouble of bonus reviewing with Jason for the Binge Movies podcast.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's out as a bonus episode for last
month.
I
thought it was fine. I mean, damn. Some people got their indie pants
bitch,
on today.
Bitch, please.
Indie pants.
Eat my ass. Eat all the S's, man.
One film festival indie pants wearing motherfuckers.
Sundance, actually.
Sundance. Whatever.
Here were some of the responses from the listeners. Timothy Cormack, Palm Springs by a mile. But the end kind of did confuse me a little bit.
Word! And that's where I think you bitched out a little bit, frankly.
Antoine said Force of Nature because I need to see how a movie that is currently 9% on Rotten Tomatoes
is 9%?
Ranked so highly for Wayne. Nine.
I guess some people just don't understand. This is the dumbest shit anyone ever said in the history of, and I don't think
it.
I'm accelerating here,
suck
time.
It. If it's, only because...
If there's no way it's,
some
not,
people
it's nowhere near as bad as 9%.
Not 91%.
Kiss my ass. This is some funny shit right here, man.
Samuel Joseph said 7,500. Not sure why, but it just sounds like it'd be an interesting watch. Hashtag Team Wayne. So clearly we can jettison him and add him to your voting block.
Bollocks, there's no voting block.
Joe Ketchum from Word Salad Radio said, already saw Palm Springs and liked it a lot.
Sure.
G-Banger. Gerald Morris from the Two Peas on a Podcast.
Gerald, I know you are.
Look, people are holding on to nostalgia for Groundhog Day. I love that movie too, but not sure how the modernized version in Palm Springs can be overlooked as the superior film. It's not original, and recency bias is a thing, I get that. But if you just put those two movies next to each other and don't let nostalgia take over, Palm Springs is better. My rant. Sorry. Don't be sorry, Gerald. Well played, sir.
I love you, Gerald, but I don't know what you're talking about. The Groundhog Day was a comedy. Well, this was... Look, they were made in different times, but Groundhog Day hits more times per minute. Kind of per hour.
Wrong.
What are you talking about? You just want to fuck Andy Samberg. Or blow him.
Whatever. Whatever
just
works.
Just butt stuff. All right, so...
You just hate Kristen Milioti.
That I do.
Milioti.
Yeah. No,
I don't understand why.
Oh, just no. Just wrong. No. All of that, no. No.
Wrong.
Anyway,
that's all the feedback we have for this week. In reference to last week's show, let's get into this week proper then in a countdown of the top 10 films which fooled us. The top 10 films which fooled us.
A little sexy.
Not sure I would have gone with the word sexy. Particularly with the inflection on food. But there we are. We've already talked about what and how it is. How about, Wayne, I lead off today.
You go, man.
My number 10, and this was really difficult to admit.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Keep going.
My number 10 is perhaps the dumbest moment I've had in movie cinema history. And it was recency. It was on the podcast. So I didn't want to put this in here. I wanted to try and come up with a list that was actually worthwhile. Mm-hmm. But it's on record. It's back 4 years ago when the podcast was not very old. My review of The Accountant.
Yeah, I remember this. This is the only time that I was ever not fooled and Paul was. Yeah. Like every other time, Paul's like, yeah, I knew that shit. So, okay.
Well, maybe not the only time, but anyway, it was certainly the most standout time in recent memory.
I was amazed.
There will be spoilers aplenty in this episode if we're not clear already.
That's why I try to use more older shows.
Yeah, right? My most recent film on my list is 2017 from a film which everybody saw. So this film is 2016. If you haven't seen The Accountant, switch off now. Fast forward. So the whole film, I'm like going, so what happened to his little brother?
That's right.
Where's his little brother? What's going on? We're flashing back. We're seeing this brother. What's going on? This is ridiculous. And meanwhile, John Barenthal is wading his way through the script for a big face-off at the end. And when they meet and they were like, they're brothers, I was like, holy shit.
Every other human on the planet was like, well, these are clearly the two brothers that were referenced very early on.
Yep.
And then, so but
you might think, Paul, you're a dumb fuck. I'm voting against you. I would like some concession for being honest.
No.
Because I could have edited this out and Wayne would have forgotten because he's high all the time.
What are you talking about? So
on life.
Exactly. No, in fact, Paul, that is the card I play every single week here. Yes, I know it's ridiculous, but it's the truth. So I understand. And BT Dubs, let me just say this about being fooled at the movies. If you are a fool at the movies, you are happier.
Well,
you know,
you're enjoying the experience.
Exactly. More. The movie did what it worked on you, which means you are having a better time.
You know what we could do as a reverse?
What?
Top 10 times we weren't fooled.
Yeah, let's do that.
That'd be fun.
That'd be cool. It's like, this is the stupidest bullshit. Yeah, that's really... Maybe we should have done that this week. Never mind.
Next week's topic has now been picked.
Done. Yes, so that's what it was. But like I say that it's like you shouldn't be ashamed of being fooled in the movies. You're like, hey, I had such a great time. I paid $12 or whatever and I got every penny's worth. Good.
Yep.
So sometimes it's a bucks. Burden.
Yeah. Wait, Wayne's referring back to 1995 prices.
It was a long time ago. I'm an old man, Paul. But yes.
What's your number 10, sir?
My number 10 is, it's a tough one. It's Iron Man 3.
Yeah, okay. A couple of the listeners.
Chris,
you need to
throw this up and actually, you know, that's a good call. Because here it is, everyone. I am often maligned for many things. But in this case, I like Iron Man 3. Yes, I know. I have a thing for Shane Black, even though he fucked up the Predator movie.
Hot damn!
Yeah. But Iron Man 3...
Shane Black's great. Hot damn was for loving this movie.
I'm fine. Like, okay, so Iron Man 3, right? It had its problems, but this particular part of it I liked. Ben Kingsley, all the way through the movie, supposed to be the Mandarin, which is a very, very big, if you're a comic book fan, like bad guy and
fruit that's orange.
Yes, and that. And they made him a faux Mandarin, as playing him as an actor.
So it's actually red.
What? Again, Paul hasn't eaten today, everyone. But yes, it's irreverent that they did this, and a lot of people had a lot of problems with it.
Yeah,
but you know what?
Did not like this one at all.
I fucking liked it. I'm sitting there going, oh my God, they did that. That's balls, people. Yes, they paid for it.
So the Mandarin is actually technically Guy Pearce, right?
That was what they did. Well, No, Mandarin was someone manufactured by Guy Pearce.
Yeah.
So, i.e., that villain does not exist in the Marvel Universe. It's played by an actor. Oh, okay. Like, right. And by the way, Ben Kingsley kills that role. So I'm a big fan of Iron Man 3's little fooled me as well. I was like, oh, they did it. What are you going to do?
Yeah, well, you wouldn't have seen it coming.
Definitely not.
Were you familiar with the Iron Man comics coming into that film?
No, the Iron Man cartoon. So I did know of the Mandarin. Okay. But yeah, there you are.
All right. My number 9 then is from a horror franchise, which Wayne, don't know if you've seen this one, actually, to be honest.
Bring it.
It's from 2004. It's the initial Saw film.
I know what happens in it, but I will not. I'm about to spoil it
because you've had 16 years, and so have you at home if you are.
And if you missed it like I did, I agree. I understand why you did that.
This film completely blew my mind when I saw this at the cinemas with my then partner, and even she, who's not a horror fan, was impressed by this. So this has play outside the horror community.
Absolutely.
In this
it's become like a classic.
It is a twist. It is, and you know, we kind of said some of these are final twists and some of them aren't, but this one is kind of at the very end of the film, there's two guys chained up by this killer, the Jigsaw killer, or Jigsaw as he's known, and there's a dead body between them, and the dead body's holding this tape recorder in his hand, like a little dictaphone thing with a tiny little recorder in his hand, which then ultimately reveals that the two of them have a reason to kill one another.
Yep.
Right? And then they have to do so. And then the dead body, which has been there the entire film, stands up because that's Jigsaw. He's been there the whole time. He's been listening. And I was like, wow.
No, it's huge. That's a really... That's your number 10.
Nine.
That's
say what you will about the acting. Say what you will about, you know...
Is it Cary Elwes?
Cary Elwes and Lee Whannell, the writer.
Yeah.
Is the other dude chained up there as well. The guy who went on to direct...
So what was
Upgrade?
Did Wesley not do a good
job? His little man. No, that's just it's a little bit hokey.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
But still, it has triggered a film franchise, which is now what, 8 films deep with Chris Rock's produced.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
I don't even know if it's a sequel, prequel, whatever it is. Another one coming along, which was obviously delayed by COVID. So this thing is a juggernaut. 16 years later, we've now had 9. Films.
I must admit, if it fooled you because the guy is alive the whole time,
who would have thought that?
Huge.
No one.
That's huge.
This is not one of those things where you can see a clue somewhere in there. It wasn't. It was just this absolute revelation. Yeah. So whereas I was done with The Accountant, not so done with Saw.
Not bad. Nice one. My number 9 is a movie that I saw once I was a child. It's No Way Out. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now we have a Kevin Costner movie, people. This is it's 1987.
Don't hold that against it.
Oh, you don't like Kevin Costner? He's great.
Lots of people don't like Kevin
Costner. Superman's dad. Anyway.
Which does not absolve him from anything.
But anyway. It helps. Everyone, this is a crafty-ass movie. Kevin Costner plays this naval officer. Now, remember, I saw this in like 88 or something, so I was but a child, right? And he plays this naval officer who bangs Sean Young, and he's also tasked with tracking down a Russian spy, only he gets caught up in all this scandalous shit when Gene Hackman, the Secretary of Defense, is suspected of killing the Sean Young character, and it goes all the way. Basically, this whole movie is like a naval espionage type movie, but in the background, you always hear the name Yuri, who is this rumored Russian agent. And long story short, it goes all the way through the movie. And at the end, the whole thing comes into like the main story finishes, resolution happens, Kevin Costner's the hero, wicked, this, that. And just in the throwaway, very final scene, you see a shot of Kevin Costner in someone's office talking to someone, right? And it seems like an epilogue kind of, oh, okay, this is a second. And then you just notice he's speaking Russian. And I'm like, what the fuck? And then it blew me away.
Whoa, hold on.
One, Yuri is real. And two, it was Kevin Costner the whole time.
What? No.
Shat my pants. All right, shat my pants as a child. I was like, fuck me hard. Except I was a child and I didn't know how to say that yet. But big, huge, huge, like, whoa. I'm sorry to spoil this for anyone who's seen it, but.
No, come on. This film was 30 plus years old.
I know. But like, I'm telling you, right? Because it was so subtly set upon you that, oh, he didn't even say, like, there's no big reveal. It's just, and he starts talking Russian, and he's like, what the fuck is him? Very cool. Very cool.
All right. There you are. That was mentioned by a few listeners as well, as was my number 8. And I'll say the name. I think probably get in the habit this one where there are spoilers. Say the name of the film, and then people can tune out.
Absolutely. Good call.
My number 8 is The Game from 1997.
My number 8 is The Game.
Hey!
Great, great, great movie. Please tell me about The Game.
The Game is infinitely superior to the wishy-washy piece of shit social media follow-up called Follow Me.
Fuck off.
From recently.
Oh, Follow Me. I thought you were going to give it a shit to the social network.
No. Yeah. No. This recently I saw and reviewed on the top 10 last 10.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
This is a film about a guy who's got everything Michael Douglas, and his brother buys him a present, which is participation in this game, which will blow your mind. It's nothing like what you can possibly imagine. And then it turns out it's a shadowy organization, which is basically stealing all his money, destituting him, ruining his life. And he reaches the point where he's going to kill himself throw himself off the top of his building skyscraper.
Yep.
Is it at his party? I can't remember.
No, what happens is it just seemed to him like at the end of the movie, right? All this shit was going down and he accidentally shot his brother.
That's right. So he even killed Sean Penn.
He's like, oh, fuck this. And he just jumps off the fucking building. But when he goes through the roof of the lower building, he falls into a big fucking, like, one of those things that stuntmen fell on.
Yeah, like a big mat.
Yeah, a mat. And it saves his life, even though he thought he was about to die. And then when people come and help him, careful, sir, it's broken glass, it's fake glass, but just in case. And it's like, what the fuck? He gets up and he's in this room full of all of his friends at this formal event.
Hey!
Yeah, everyone's like, hey! Gotcha. So it's like, yeah, exactly. So, but that's so cool!
That moment he jumped off. That's the fool you moment. The moment was like, oh, he's dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
Oh, well, all right, this film. Because the whole way through the film, you are wondering. Is this the game or is it
exactly.
not?
Exactly.
And that was the moment I committed. And I only had to commit for, I guess, what is it, 30 seconds of screen time.
30 seconds, you're like, oh shit, it was all real.
Oh, fucking hell, that's rough. That's right. Oh, no, it's not.
But imagine that, though. What's cool about this movie? So David Fincher, so awesome, obviously, right? But David Fincher is showing you this movie where it's like, imagine that emotional moment. I just decided to kill myself and now I'm okay and all my friends are here and all my friends know that I just tried to kill myself. So now they're toasting me, and what am I feeling?
No, but it was set up to be that you would, that's your only out, because that's why they built that mat
there. But they knew that he just killed himself. Like, they must have all been briefed to say that he's going to fall through this fucking roof.
There's every chance he will, well, I can't remember his name, the character is the name of the film, that David, let's say, will fall through the ceiling here, and because he will have killed himself, because we have left him with no option.
Yeah, but that still means that they know you just tried to kill yourself.
I know, it's an odd moment to come back from.
But that's so cool. That's why it's such good cinema, because the friends, every single one of them, are smiling on their
face.
They're cool with it. Yeah, so I'm like, oh my God, this is surreal in how it feels, and it's handled very well.
I mean, I'm not sure everyone would get behind this plan and not tell him.
No. I know. That's what it means. Like, you're going to drive him to suicide.
You have to suspend disbelief that everyone's like, yeah, cool. This is the guy who's got everything.
But because David Fincher made it, I do believe it and I want to believe it. So I'm fine with it. That's why this movie's so good. The game, you got to check it out. I know we just spoiled it, but if you haven't seen it.
You've seen it already.
You got to see the shit out of it.
You've seen it already. All right. Your my number seven then, because it was both at number eight, is from Scream from 1996, around the same time. Obviously, it's the heady era of big fooled me moments.
Mm-hmm.
Two killers.
The Scream 1?
Yeah.
Guess what?
What?
One of these is on my list, and it's not that Scream, but it's a Scream. Keep going.
Interested to hear which one it is. Yes. Scream 1, two killers. Now, it's a very simple fooled you moment.
I don't know if I ever knew about that shit, though.
Because this film, I don't think anyone's ever done that before. Certainly not in a big Hollywood
studio. It's definitely
release.
The first time I heard about it, right? And you would know cinema shit. So
it's a simple tweak to the formula, because it doesn't work. Because the whole time through the film, you're like, well, it can't be Stew here.
Because he was here while
that
was here.
Scene. Well, it can't be that dude because he was in this scene. It's brilliant. Kevin Williamson wrote this guy who created Dawson's Crack. Yeah, and just nails it. And look, it's obviously a Wes Craven film, but I think it's a script that's the smartest part.
Agreed. And you know, so you say Scream was the first time they had two killers, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, good. Yeah.
Hold on to that thought then, because...
Absolutely.
Right. But there you are. It's simple as that. Scream, two killers, what the fuck? Did not see it coming.
Nice. My number seven is a movie that I think I may be the only person on the planet it fooled.
Okay.
So this is
your accountant.
Yeah, exactly. This is my accountant moment. All right. It's Shutter Island.
No, there were people absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
And the reason why is because I picked this next week's list. Yeah. This is on my list.
No, this is no way. This is obvious. All right, everyone, just in case you don't know, all right? The plot is that this U.S. Marshal, Teddy Daniels, is Leo DiCaprio, attempts to track down an escaped mental patient. This person is responsible for the murder of her three children, okay? Now, the twist is, 3, 2, 1, Leo DiCaprio is actually the guy he's hunting down. He's been incarcerated at the mental hospital for murdering his wife after she killed their three children. That is not a fun scene, everyone. The search for Rachel is a game concocted by his therapist to shake him from his insanity to avoid him being lobotomized, right? I didn't know that till the end.
It's not supposed to know it till the end.
Yeah.
Lots of people agree with you. I mean, I think most people do. I'll talk about it more next week if we do indeed do that counter next week. But for me, there's a telling moment where it gave it away.
Yes. Now, look, we're happy to talk about it here because I don't know if you want it, but like I know where Paul picked up stuff, and I know where I glossed over it. Paul's brain is sharper, right?
I disagree with that. I think it's just that there's certain things which
you're talking about Mark Ruffalo and the gun. Yes. Is that what you're doing?
Well, no, I'm talking Mark. There's a look in a sequence about 20 minutes into the film, and I'm just like, it felt fake. It felt forced. It was your clue.
Yeah.
And I just latched onto it. I'm like, hang on, this doesn't make any sense. That's and they're here and they're doing this. And what if he's that?
I, on the other hand, didn't notice. So you see, it's just
most
that.
People will be that. You know, I know this sounds probably the next week's show is everyone's going to say, "Fuck off, you did."
No, he did. He would have known. He was at a right as we walked out. So, but the thing is, I was sitting there going, "Is it? Oh my god, the whole thing was concocted, and now all of those things make sense." And then there's this story that at the end of Shutter Island, when they find out that Leo actually has not capitulated and he still thinks he's a detective. And Mark Ruffalo,
they're going to the bottom,
right? But there's a story or a theory which goes like he actually did get cured, but he can't live with the fact that he killed his wife, so he's going to pretend that he didn't get cured, and then he's going to force his own lobotomy, and that's the only way he wants to get out. Boom! I know it's a lot of layers, but anyway, that's
Martin Scorsese, very nice.
Oh yeah, he works.
All right, my from that highbrow,
yes,
to my number six, which is from Deep Blue Sea. Right.
Okay. What fooled you?
This is not a plot twist. It's just a plot development which came out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, fair enough. Right? Actually, this is a good one.
Now, Deep Blue Sea is a film about genetically engineered sharks. They're trying to look for a cure for Alzheimer's, and they're making sharks smarter. Don't ask me why. It's in the script.
It's underwater facility. Yeah,
underwater facility. The sharks are too smart and decide to start fight back, and they kill a couple of people. Samuel L. Jackson is a huge investor,
massive, and the biggest star in the film.
Except. He was given the "and Samuel L. Jackson" bit. You know, so in the credits, they're like, duh, 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 "and Samuel L. Jackson." So I thought, oh, we'll have a bit role. Oh, here he is. The first actor's film does a good enough job of convincing me that maybe he won't make it all the way to the end. Yeah. I was aware of that.
Yeah.
But by no way, shape, or form did I expect him to be giving his inspirational speech where we're not going to turn on each other.
Yep.
We are going to survive this. We're going to pull together just like I did, because I make this a big plot point they established in the film. He had been on some climbing expedition, and if not for him, everyone would have died.
Yeah, but people had to get killed, and we wouldn't say anything until right now, and I'm saying, boom.
Here it is, and da-da-da-da, and then he's standing there, and then out of the moon pool, a shark leaps,
lands on
him, and drags him back into the water.
Just chomps him and pulls him back down.
Gone. That's this is a moment that this film series, this is a series now. I watched Deep Blue Sea 3 the other night.
How is it?
It's better than two. That's not saying much.
I take it Thomas Jane did not come back.
No, there's no one from the originals that survived the first one who is back. But the film series continually tries to emulate that.
Does it really?
Yeah, because they're always about it. That's what makes this film
famous. Absolutely.
No one saw that coming. It was a jaw-dropping moment of like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Not just are we off Samuel Jackson, but we off him in the most ridiculous, over-the-top way.
That's right.
It's so audacious. Mm. It's stunningly impressive.
Agreed, because you're sitting there and you're like, oh my God, he got taken. And I was like, oh, but maybe he'll survive. And then you see a shot of the shark chewing him literally in half. It's like chomp, and then he fucking his leg fall off. Like, oh, fuck. That's it. He's done, son. So yeah, that's a good one. That's a good call.
Thank you.
Nice one. Everyone, number six is my Scream 2.
Two.
Entry.
Okay.
Now, here's what happened with Scream 2, all right? One, I didn't expect to like Scream 1. Paul took us all to it as a group of children as we were kids.
Children.
Tell them, how old were we? Like fucking 18?
20, 21. 20, right. Yeah, not quite children.
Yeah,
motherfuckers. I took us when we were four.
And so I liked Scream. I went, I had faith in maybe I'm normal and I can watch a horror movie, right?
Hooray!
Yeah, turns out I was not. So, Scream 2 comes along and I'm like, okay, well, what are they going to do here? All right. And long story short, it's the same thing. Sydney, Neve Campbell, she survived the first events and her nightmare isn't over because basically there's another killing and this sort of shit, right? The bad guys in the movie, now I was like, they're definitely going to be two again because they had two in the first one. So which two, right?
Yep.
Fooled me. It ends up being Timothy Oliphant, right?
And Wayne couldn't possibly imagine for one second that Timothy Oliphant would be the killer.
What? No!
Because he has such a man crush on him.
That's true. But this is pre-Raylan Givens, so I didn't care as much. Now, I actually can get with Timothy Oliphant being a young, fit guy or whatever, and he's one of the killers. Sure. He's very skeet, Ulrichian. And
yeah,
at the time, you know. But then the other killer was the mom.
It was the fucking like it
Laurie
was
Metcalf.
Laurie from, Metcalf, yeah. Right? She was like the whole time. She's all the way through the movie. She seems niggling because she's like
well,
a
she's
reporter.
Not like mom in the film. She's a reporter.
She's a reporter, but she's shitting on. Yeah. But she ended up being the mom of the dude, and that's why she was. And she was paying Timothy Olyphant to do the murders.
Skeet Ulrich's mom.
Skeet, exactly. And because she's pissed about him getting killed, right? Boom. So here's what happens. I'm like, whoa! I did not see it coming, and it's one of the few times in cinema me watching history. That I was like 100% didn't see it coming, and I knew I said I bet it's that other guy or this other guy, but she didn't even get on my radar. So now I'm impressed. Scream 2. I'm sure everyone else picked this one, but me, no.
Oh, I didn't pick it.
No, it's nuts. But it was really cool, man. It was just cool.
Didn't blow me away when it happened because you know at some point you realize characters are there for what reason?
And yeah, but not, yeah. I think the skill comes in. Actively making you disregard one of them or the one that you really need to. So it's like, oh, but like that's the most acute surprise I remember having in one of those movies. Cool. There you go. Cool. Number six, Scream 2.
My number five then into the top half of the list is from the most recent film, 2017, mm-hmm. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, which one? I mean, which part?
It's the moment where Liz's dad is revealed to be the Vulture.
Oh, that was good. Yes, I remember
that. That was astounding. That was like in the cinema going, whoa, that totally blew me away.
Because he just answers the door, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, shit, it's him, shit. And they really double-blinded your ass because she and her mother, African-American.
Yep.
Him, white as a motherfucker, did not put him on the radar.
Yeah, exactly. So, and she was, you know, slightly lighter skin, but
is she his? I actually thought she might be his adopted daughter. No, she actually was.
I reckon directly, definitely just straightforward daughter. But yeah, that came out of nowhere. And then his revelation, his moment of...
In the car? Yeah. Oh, no, yeah. That was good.
Oh, no, because...
There was a bit where he, well, you
yeah,
find
back
out.
In the car, then
in
he
the
turns
car,
around.
He finds out that no, he's Spider-Man.
Because Spider-Man realizes straight away that's
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he does. Right. Yeah, Spider-Man does. But
and then he works it out through the course of the conversation. And when they're in the car, he's like, I'll have to kill you if you don't let it go.
That's right. Now you
it's
have a great,
great scene. Michael so Keaton good. Really acting.
Menacing.
Acting the shit out of that role. And could have just turned around with a gun. I mean, not that he had, I'm sure he has one in the house. Could have just turned around and plugged him twice in the gut. But how does he explain that to his daughter? So gives him the out. Says, leave me be. Stop coming at me, and we can just go on to give my daughter a good night.
That's right. I know. That's the real cold, but it's like, give my daughter a good night. It's like, fuck you, motherfucker.
Great, great scene. Really elevates cool. that film for me into being top echelon of MCU films.
Would agree.
So much better than Far From Home. Homecoming.
Far From Home had the thing with J. Jonah Jameson at the end that kind of helped you out. But yeah, I know what you mean. I know. All right. No, good cut. That's a good one. That's a good call.
Thank you.
All right. My number five. I know you like this movie, and I suspect it may be on your list, but I'm not sure. The movie is called Arlington Road.
Oh, it's a good choice.
Yeah? Right. So, okay, here's the thing. 1999 film, people, okay? I think the problem with this movie is it had the wrong title. I think it didn't do all that well because of this, but...
It should have been called Shit Goes South, and then at the end you're really, really upset.
That's right. That's kind of how it is. That's kind of how it went. It's about Jeff Bridges, who plays this widower, who begins to suspect that his new neighbors, Tim Robbins and Joan Cusack, are terrorists who are targeting the FBI headquarters for like this big-ass attack. Of course, none of his like claims come with any proof, and in the end, shall we say, he's not only proven right, but he ends up being an unwitting mule. What happens is Tim Robbins, through a few ways of basic machinations, ends up
manipulating
Jeff Bridges to smack him out and then grab the his car and drive to the FBI headquarters to warn everyone. But what actually happens is his ass goes to the headquarters underneath, gets out, realizes, holy shit, I've been fucking fooled, and the bomb goes off. He gets blamed as the
bomb
terrorist.
Bomb's in the boot.
Bomb's in the boot.
Or the
takes
trunk.
Out the whole fucking building and shit. He ends up being the terrorist when, of course, he was the guy trying to stop the terrorism. And the real terrorists, scot-free. Scot-free. So clever, so scary. And so what the fuck. And it was really cool, the revelation moment, because it's literally a slow-mo of just the screen lighting up in Jeff Bridges' face as the car explodes. Fucking nasty, man. But great fucking movie.
It's a good choice.
Arlington Road.
Right,
give it a try.
Right behind you there. That's a nice one. Sir, my number four is an age-old one. A one which comes up time and again for everybody.
A few of those
ones. It created almost its own subgenre of M. Night Shyamalan. So I'm talking about The Sixth Sense.
Okay.
From 1999. Low is on your list as well.
Totally.
Okay. Let's just state it here. 21 years later, Bruce Willis is dead.
Yes.
He died in the opening scene. He got shot by a patient of his who came to his house and was all fucked up. And this is every clinician's fucking nightmare. speaking from experience. And then it turns out that why Haley Joel Osment is so frightened of him when he first sees him, not because he's a therapist, because every kid would be frightened. It's because he's actually a ghost as well, but he's a ghost that turning out to try to help him. And we only realize that at the end of the film.
Because we don't know he's dead.
It seems like Toni Collette that has hired him to look after her son.
That's why it's so cool, okay? Now, here's the thing about why it's high on my list, right? Is that this has now become like a cliche. Like, this is such a popular twist that it became the twist, right? It's almost like the dick in The Crying Game, right? Like, it's like...
We're mentioned by a few years yeah, as well.
All right. When you actually see it, people forget how much it actually was a surprise. That's why it's so popular, right?
Oh, I don't forget. Totally fooled me.
Dude, the way it's played so well with that... the first time you see Bruce Willis after the bang, right? He's seemingly sitting in a chair facing Toni Collette in a room with nothing else, and they both greet the kid. Yeah. But of course, he wasn't there. Yeah, it wasn't dark. You just... And so clever, man. And I freaked out when I found out.
And the problem, if I can put it this way, is that this then wrote Shyamalan Ding Dong into a corner. He felt the need to write a twist into every fucking film because that's what everyone expected of him.
Yes.
And arguably, it was okay in Unbreakable.
I think Unbreakable is his second best film in terms of that. It's Unbreakable? It is Unbreakable.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just trying to think. Oh, my pause there was only to think about his other films.
So like Village, Lady in the Water.
Yeah. All I mean, I don't know if
Monkey Walk one. What? No.
The Happening.
The Happening.
There's no real twist in that film.
Isn't there? Okay.
It's just shit.
It's just the twist is it's not good.
The twist is he got you to pay money to watch that fucking movie.
Fucked you.
But then, of course, the Split was pretty great.
Split was his return to form?
Yep.
And then fucking Glass
and
happened.
And then there was the one about the kids going to visit I think it's called, his grandparents and what the strange shit is going on there. And then, how terrible that. Glass was.
Yeah.
It was such a letdown. But anyway, point being, he wrote himself to that corner where it was felt like he had to create that holy shit moment. That's how good that movie
and
was.
And then you're seeing it, you're waiting for it, and that's what ultimately his downfall. Yep. Anyway.
What are you going to do?
My number four is a movie that I've always dug, and I think we talk about it a bit on the show, although not that often recently. Frailty is you know, as well. So this is a film. This is Bill Paxton's.
Honorable Mentions.
Good. One of Bill Paxton's first. I think it was his first.
It was his directorial debut.
And that's the reason we went to see it. We were like, ooh, you know, Hudson fucking directed a movie.
Hudson!
So we went in there, and it's about this father, played by Bill Paxton, who convinces his two young sons that certain people are actually demons who need to be killed. And it's played, and what he does is he actually captures these people, ties them up, and fucking kills them with an axe and shit. And it's played like, my God, there's this crazy father who's teaching his kids how to be killers because he's insane. And basically, it makes you assume that he's basically insane. And then at the end, I don't want to actually spoil this one in case you want to see it.
It's 20 years plus old.
Fine. At the end, all right. The kids grow up, and you find out that the dad wasn't crazy after all, and he actually was killing demons the whole time. And all the bad guys that you see as seemingly victims were actually cunts that were bad guys.
Plus, let's be clear here.
Yeah.
There's another twist.
Yeah.
Which is the brother you think is telling the story is actually the other brother. The other brother died.
Yes. That's right. Matthew McConaughey plays it. Exactly. And that's why it's such a... But I tell you what, this movie is... I think that there's a level of audacity here, which is the reason you get fooled. It's literally a very right-wing... It's a right-wing movie by comparison because it's saying, no, God is absolutely real and he's protecting these people and he's killing these people. But because it's a movie showing you that, you're like, you're not supposed to think that. Very, very clever.
There's a film by one of the guys who directed The Blair Witch Project.
Oh, yeah.
Which is all about cult. Mm-hmm. The cult is a doomsday cult and they're going to kill themselves to avoid the end of the world, basically, right? I think it's Daniel Myrick, his name is. He wrote and directed this film.
Yeah.
And the film ends with one of the two protagonists getting out alive. Yeah. Like he escapes, the cult kill themselves and whatever, and he's back home with his family.
Yeah.
And then at the very last shot of the film is these great big purple lights in the sky and he walks outside and it is the end of the world.
Oh.
So they were right the whole time.
Oh.
So it's that kind of thing here in Frailty as well.
Yes, because you're sitting there, there's such a magnet, like the ending is, you just don't see it coming because you don't expect that from a movie. That's how it's good.
Yeah, exactly. You're coached to believe cults are crazy.
Exactly.
And this guy is not a cult because it's just him and he's indoctrinating his children. He's crazy. But it turns out, No, they're not.
That's right. And you know what? I have yet to meet one person who doesn't like Frailty. If honestly, it's a great fucking movie.
I would put Frailty in the same box that I put Children of Men. If you don't like that film, get the fuck out of my life.
You heard it first here, ladies. All right.
That was my ladies. Friends. Friends. Everyone.
I'm talking to ladies. All right. So,
co-workers.
Frailty is my number four. Paul, your number
three. My number three is very, very simply explained. It's Matthew Vaughn's feature film debut. It's 2004's Layer Cake.
Oh, great.
It's the very end of the film where Daniel Craig's protagonist through the whole film says, "My name? If you knew my name, you'd be as clever as me." Mm. And you go, what?
No one's mentioned his name the whole movie?
And I was like, it's such a expected thing. I literally went back through the film and watched it a second time to see whether or not that were true.
Yeah.
To say nothing of what happens after that. He gets shot out of the blue and blah, blah. Probably he dies. We don't know for sure. Yeah. We're left on his dying potentially.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I was like, it's true. He is literally known in every post film as XXXX.
And then that was sort of relatively unheard of when we had seen that.
2004.
Yeah. Well, we just saw a movie, Unhinged, where the...
Same deal.
The same deal. You don't mention... the guy's name is not known, but...
Doesn't have the same impact 16 years later. No,
it
wasn't the same.
Exactly. But that time then, it was like, boom. And so, yeah, had a very, very cool. And Layer Cake was
and again, to be fair, between the difference between Unhinged and Layer Cake...
Yeah.
Daniel Craig's character is the protagonist. He's in every scene. It follows his every move. Yeah. Whereas Unhinged, Russi Crowe's man is the antagonist.
Yeah.
We don't really need a name for him. He is what he is.
That's right. You're worried about the girl whose name you do know. Yeah,
Rachel.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Cool. Nice one. My number three is a movie that's basically one of my favorite movies ever. It's The Prestige.
Okay? Yeah, I knew this would be on your list.
Okay.
So and I could have put it on mine, but I went, why not talk about this one?
Yeah, it's all totally. You Everyone, basically, these two 19th century rival magicians, Hugh Jackman and Christian Bale, one causes the death of the other's wife, and basically... One becomes obsessed with finding out how the other one pulls off this signature teleportation trick, the transported man, and goes to extraordinary lengths to copy it. Now, this movie here, okay, the number of clues, twists, and the depth at which it works, in my opinion, is genius filmmaking. I'll go right ahead and say it, all right? Because this non-linear storyline moves forwards and backwards, but on a scale... That is, well, it's much bigger than Memento, which is Chris Nolan's, like, you know,
which I considered for my list.
Right. But at the end of this movie, there's actually about four or five surprise endings to this movie, aspects to it. But the main one probably is that Christian Bale is actually a twin. And that's how he does his transporter man.
Is that the main one? Or is it
the David Bowie thing? The reproduction?
Clones.
The clones, yeah. This is back in the day, but Hugh Jackman, the whole point of the movie is that each magician is really, really dedicated to his craft. Christian Bale is willing to live his entire life as a lie, swapping him between him and his actual brother to as though they lived one life so that he could just keep doing this trick. Hugh Jackman, whenever he clones himself, he doesn't know which one dies. He's willing to literally kill himself over and over just to do a trick.
I think that's the bigger twist for me.
Really?
The bigger whoa moment. Like, okay, they were twins. He's literally willing to die himself. No one dies in Christian Bale's trick.
No, but in Christian Bale's one of them gets imprisoned. And as he gets dragged away, he's talking to the other Christian Bale guy saying, "Live a life for me, brother. Live a life." You know, like,
yeah, so- but that's still better than just drowning.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty fucking harsh. It's really harsh.
And if I'm... I haven't only watched this film once. If I'm remembering correctly,
yeah,
it's random who dies between the two, the clone and the...
That's right. So Hugh Jackman is willing to die for this trick and let someone else, a clone of him,
so he's got another version of him who's somehow got all the same memories and whatever. Yeah, which makes no sense, but
that's
whatever.
Fine. But that's the conceit of the film.
Yes. Yep.
But that's why... again, this is the shit. This movie is so... Like, you think about it and you can re-watch this movie 10 times and find new shit. It's one of those. So... Okay. I'm just saying. The Prestige, number three.
All right. My number two is the most shocking death and revelation in cinema history. It's the villain revealing himself.
Yeah.
LA Confidentials from 1997.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So Kevin Spacey has worked out half of this whole thing that's going on in this film, which I won't go into, A, because I can't remember all the intricacies. It's a James Elroy novel and therefore based off James Elroy novel, so it's really complicated.
Yeah.
But B, also because all that boils down to is what matters is this. He's talking to James Cromwell.
Who's his boss, the chief?
Dudley Smith.
Yep.
And he's implicated and he realizes it in a moment.
Yep.
He And you see Kevin Spacey, I can't remember.
Just talking to him, sitting down in the kitchen, saying, hey, yeah, this is
the guy. He's basically a glorified, not real detective. He's actually
but he's doing a real
he's a consultant to TV shows.
Yeah.
And no one thinks he can do anything.
Hmm. But he turns out to be really smart enough to put this together.
Yeah. And then he gets shot. Bang.
Yep.
And Dudley Smith is one of the bad guys.
But it's his boss.
Yeah,
I know.
It's his boss. I have never, like, intake breath more sharply in
because
cinema.
It was so unexpected.
Came from nowhere.
Do you know why it was good? Because Kevin Spacey is sitting in the kitchen. Dudley, what's his James Cromwell is standing and just like, and he's just giving clues like, don't stick your nose in where it's not wanted, boyo, kind of thing, right?
Yep.
And then Kevin's like, I'm just trying to figure this out. Anyway, and he's talking and he's delivering this really good monologue about, here's what I think's happening, here's who I think's involved. Dudley Smith turns around, he's like, keeps on talking. And then just a really casual shot, James Cromwell whips around, he's got a gun, bang, that's it. No time for you to go, oh, he's got a gun. It's just bang, what the fuck
doesn't
happened?
Talk about it, doesn't point at him and start saying soliloquizing.
That's right.
Just says bang.
And then the cooler thing then is that as Kevin Spacey's dying, he says, Rollo Tomasi, to make him talk to Guy Pearce, and Guy Pearce, holy shit, knows he did it, right? So like, very clever, good writing, fantastic. And that was, a huge shock.
Yeah, part of the LA Quartet. James Elroy's novels, and I've read them all, and they're all very good, but geez, they're hard to read. They're dense.
Absolutely.
They're dense, and his writing style is not accessible.
No, he's not. His writing style is staccato, this happened, this happened, this happened. It's really hard to read, and I don't like it, frankly. So, good movies. Let's go in the books. Anyway, okay. My number two is, I'm possibly thinking it might be Paul's number one, but who knows? It's The Usual Suspects, because I can't not put this on here. I can't not put it on here.
It is my number one.
Of course it is. Now, check it out, people.
Anticlimactic,
I know. But if I don't put it on here, it's a lie.
We didn't watch this one together. Right?
No, we didn't.
I remember I went with friend of the show, Richard. We went to the cinema. We sat there and watched this film. And it was, like I just talked about, gasping and jaw-dropping for LA Confidential. Coming out of the cinema, turning to Richard and just going, the fuck, man? Yeah. Because this is 1995. We were like 20 years old, if we were 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Just went and saw something off, like, let's do something. Let's go movies. All right, let's go.
And we didn't
movie.
Even know, I think we might have known Gabriel Byrne. We did not know Benicio Del Toro.
Not
we did
really
not
any of them, to be honest.
Kevin Pollak, none of those folks.
Thwaite.
Yeah, I think I actually liked Stephen Baldwin most.
Stephen Baldwin might have been the most bankable name.
Because he did Fled or whatever, I think. I'm not sure.
No,
if
Fled was
then.
After. Was, but maybe Threesome was before.
Threesome, I remember. Yes, exactly. No, good call. And in my head, in my associative memory, you might have seen it again with me at some stage. I'm not sure. But I remember seeming to think that we were together. But
well, we were talking about this film so many times. And because of how this film, incidentally, whether you want to credit it with this or not, so it made Bryan Singer.
Absolutely.
Bryan Singer, off the basis of this film, gets the X-Men gig.
Yep.
Comic book films to this day owe a debt of gratitude to The Usual Suspects. Therefore.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
And Christopher McQuarrie's career was made off this film.
I didn't even know he wrote this. Yeah. Christopher McQuarrie,
who is now
the Motion Impossible director?
Motion Impossible?
Motion Impossible. Give him a motion. It's fucking great, man. I'm telling you. So, I didn't even
know
he wrote
this.
He's
done the last two. He's doing the next one.
Yeah, he's the shit. Fucking, that's the bomb, man. And this move, by the way, the plot is five criminals plot against the police in being called for a crime that they didn't commit, but they begin to uncover this larger plot stemming from a legendary criminal known as Kaiser Soze, also Paul's alter ego on Letterboxd.
Well, more importantly, it's also the film which gave life to Reap.
Yeah.
So long-term listeners of the show will know that Wayne and I made a film when we were not much older than when this film came out. And it's a feature-length film, and it's full of twists and turns, and is just as... No, it's not. It's fucking garbage.
It's balls
but
unwatchable.
But we made a film, and not many people can say they've done that. So
and
hooray
we really
us.
Shouldn't either. Anyway, so long story short, the job goes wrong, and the guy in the end, the reveal... I don't even know. I need to say it. But
of course you can. Well, might as well.
Okay, fine. So the whole time, Kevin Spacey plays this sort of seemingly sort of special needs kind of on the spectrum kind of guy or whatever. And he's the one recanting the story to the police because he's the only one who survived. But of course, Chaz Palminteri, the cop, goes, well, this guy's nothing. Fuck it. He does nothing. He lets him go. He walks away. And only 10 minutes later or 10, 40, few
well,
seconds
no,
later.
He's outside the police
minute,
station.
He's outside the police station. He puts it together that he's made the entire story up, and it turns out
at the same time as Kevin Spacey gives up his limp, gives up fact his arm is no longer working.
That's right, his fingers or whatever, he just pulls them apart, and he's like, okay. Turns out he's Kaiser Soze the whole time, but you as an audience member didn't see it coming until just seconds of like, what the hell is this? And the actual reveal is so
it's probably the best. Probably one of the best reveals in terms of that.
As far as I'm concerned, I've never been more fooled. It's my number one, your number two.
Nice.
All right, I'll run back through mine very quickly then. My number 10 that you counted, I'm sorry. 9, Saw. 8, The Game. 7, Scream. 6, Deep Blue Sea. 5, Spider-Man Homecoming. 4, The Sixth Sense. 3, Layer Cake. 2, LA Confidential. Number 1, The Usual Suspects. Wayne, over to you then. What is the moment you were most fooled in cinema history after you give your 10 through 2?
Cool. 10 was Iron Man 3. 9 was No Way Out. 8, The Game. 7, Shutter Island. 6, Scream 2. 5, Arlington Road. 4, Frailty. 3, The Prestige. 2, The Usual Suspects. And my number 1 was frickin' The Sixth Sense. To me, I was more surprised in that movie than I was in The Usual Suspects.
Fair enough.
But only slightly.
No arguments.
So, you know,
all good, all good. There you are. There are our lists. What about yours? We get into... Oh, wait. Do you want to do any honorable mentions?
Okay, let's bust a few out here.
I got a couple.
Okay, Primal Fear. Thought that was kind of good.
Edward Norton.
Yep, Unbreakable. I did not expect the person to get shot like that in The Departed.
That was also on my honorable mention list. So,
yeah.
All right, fine.
It's a development. But it was just, oh, shit, I didn't think that was going to happen. So, bang. So, yes, just those.
I had Psycho. Psycho would totally be on my list had I not known what was going to happen.
It's the same as this, the crime game. I wish I didn't know about the dick.
Yeah, so...
I've never said that before.
So, ironically, most of Wayne's women partners have said... No. I knew it, so I couldn't be taken
by
it.
That's always the thing, right? When you
go to the 1960 film Psycho. But had I seen it at the time, wait, you killed the main character off at the end of the first, or halfway through the film? Holy fucking shit. That's ballsy as fuck. And Old Boy.
Yeah.
Old Boy, the revelation at the end there, which is just icky beyond all fuck.
Confession, I didn't understand it when I saw it. I was like, he's flicking through the thing, and what is this? And I was like, wait, what does that mean? What does that mean? And then suddenly, that means that he was the daughter, that she was the daughter.
Yeah,
I didn't get it though. Yeah. And I still
can I be clear here? The 2003, Korean version, not the Spike Lee.
Oh, with Josh Brolin or whatever.
Yeah, terrible, terrible.
Is that shit? Is it?
Yeah.
But the down the stairs, they did that one shot. Yeah. Where they did down the stairs. That was kind of cool. But anyway,
still terrible.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Still a not needed remake.
Spike Lee, what a shock.
We can't possibly let American audiences read subtitles. That would be abhorrent. All right, that's the end of our list. What about yours? We get into that in a segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Talk about
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with good friend of the show and one of the co-hosts of the Retro Cinema Podcast, Gidget Von LaRue. Been a while since we've heard from her. Presumed innocent. When the real killer is revealed, WTF?
Shit! I should have given that. That's a really, really good one. Damn, that was good.
All right, not on Wayne's list. Can't count. Don't give him credit.
Fuck you.
The others. Oh, damn! It's them.
That I do know the twist of, but not have seen. Go on.
The Sixth Sense, seems obvious now, but I didn't pick it up when I first saw it. No.
No one did!
We didn't, unless you happen to be spoilt for it, a la friend of ours, Christian.
Yes.
Yes. Dishonorable mention, The Crying Game. Seriously, folks, didn't pick that as a dude the minute you saw him?
Nope. Nope. Fine with me. It's like, yep, must be a chick.
The Ocho Juro Parlay Hour said, love The Usual Suspects ending.
Mm-hmm.
Pilot Comics, John and... patron to the show said, everyone hates it, but the twist with the Mandarin in Iron Man 3 was incredible. Great film, too.
Thank you. Yes, indeed.
There you are, sir. A vote for you, I would say.
Possibly.
The Lukewarm Cinema Podcast said, I remember being in the theater for this and just being like completely fooled and blown away.
Yeah.
I love that movie. Paul Robinson said, Scream. Blown away by the entire film, but the two killer reveal at the end was...
Yep, gangster.
Lee Thomas said, Shadow Island. There you are, Wayne.
Hmm.
Interstellar. What? Not sure what the revelation was. He hasn't.
It was an odd ending for sure. Oh, that he was in the future. Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Time Trap starts off like The Descent, then goes batshit crazy. Any film that goes batshit crazy after The Descent has my vote in terms of wanting to see it. So Time Trap, I will seek out.
Okay.
Shvetch's Fans Papa, in addition to films already mentioned Shutter Island, again, mm-hmm. Primal Fear.
Yep.
And, of course, The Empire Strikes Back.
Ah, yeah. He's dead. Go on.
Brad from The Cinema Guys said, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Cosplayers getting arrested.
What the hell? That wasn't fooling you. That was they ran out of fucking ideas. That's what happened there.
Be the Solution on Twitter said, Fallen. So
Denzel. And Ziesel.
That was pretty cool. The Prestige and Memento.
Word.
So a bit of a Nolan love there. Definitely. Tim Cormack said The Prestige again. Magical sleight of hand everywhere. Up starts us believing this is a little happy little movie. That's literal quote. Then bam, grown man tears everywhere.
Fair enough.
And lastly, Old Boy for that Oh Boy reveal moment. Over to the Facebook listener community. Dylan Nikolowski, I think first time contributor to the show, said, I watched Sleepaway Camp not expecting to see a female serial killer with a tiny penis. But the filmmakers fooled me.
Sleepaway Camp?
Yeah.
Oh, you bet you've seen this.
Yeah.
Of course you've fucking seen it.
Now, Joey DiCarlo, I want to give full credit here because he's given a proper answer here. And number three, the Vulture, is Liz's dad in Spider-Man Homecoming. Tara and the narrator are the same person in Fight Club, number two. And number one, the orphan in Orphan is actually a 33-year-old woman.
I only read about this as a result of this. That's horrible.
Then he played this note to wrap it up on Twitter. In Arseholes from Planet Squirt, none of the characters were from another planet.
Sorry. Arseholes from the Planet Squirt.
Yep.
Well, someone's worked on that name. Someone has worked hard on that name.
Well played, Joey. Chris Sutherland said, The Last Jedi. I was told it was enjoyable. I was fooled.
Fuck off.
Jonathan Slander said, gotcha moments to me. Isn't the M. Night Shyamalan twist? Fair enough. So I'm going with The Departed.
Yep.
What happens there?
Boom.
Burn after reading. What happens there?
What the fuck? How did that movie end? I have no idea. Anyway.
Not how it ended, but who dies. And suddenly in the film.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, right. And that's what he's also referring to in Departed. And then his last choice, Deep Blue Sea. My choice on that one.
Good, John.
Francis Booker said Planet of the Apes.
The first one.
Yeah, I have to. Orphan, number two, and number one, the others, also mentioned. Mina Harker said The End of Saw, where Jigsaw stands up. No Way Out, Kevin Costner was a rush.
Boom!
And number one, The Crying Game. You know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Mina, you and Gidget need to talk. Nick Spinarski said, number three, A Little Bit of Sunshine, Ola's pageant routine. I don't think anyone was expecting that.
I can't remember.
She starts doing like a full-on strip tease when she's like 6 years old.
Oh, fuck. Yeah. All right. That's probably why I can't remember.
Number two, the Harry Potter series, that Snape is actually the heart and soul of the entire series. And number one, the Happening / Lady of the Water / Avatar The Last Airbender, that M. Night is in fact awful, and the Sixth Sense or the fluke. And that is it for this week's Pop 10. Thank you so much to everyone who gets back to us with their choices for the show. You do breathe life into what we do.
Blomph.
All right, Wayne, how do the listeners breathe life into what we do?
Oh, nice one. They can do that by Googling The Countdown Podcast, get out our socials, get all our shit, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at TheCountdownPC. Check us out on podbean.com where we host the show. You can like and follow us there. Check out ccradio.com.au for ourselves and other great Aussie podcasts. And then finally, the Facebook listener community, links in the show note where we interact with our good friends.
And all the folks.
Fans, both of them.
Occasionally a fiend.
Potentially. All right, Wayne, what's happening next week then for episode 280?
Do you want to do that episode?
Yeah.
Okay, so what are we going to call it?
We're going to do it the top 10 times we weren't fooled.
We weren't fooled at the movies. Good.
When we shouldn't have been, in brackets.
Yeah, something like that.
There we are. Okay, so the times that we saw what was coming in.
Yeah, and the filmmakers foolishly thought they were fooling us, but they were just cocks.
Or maybe every so often we actually pick something way when we shouldn't have. Like Shutter Island, where most people were fooled.
Well done.
But I managed to pick that one out. So in retrospect, maybe that sounds like we're just blowing our own horn, but...
Yeah, but I do that every day.
Yes, that was a euphemism.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
Well, shall we say at this stage it's that, unless we come up with something different. Word.
Should be a fun one as a backup to this one, I reckon. So, we've exposed today how we're dumb, the accountant. So next week maybe we can expose why occasionally we get things right.
Word.
All right.
All right.
Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been The Soundboard.
Are you letting it run now? Suck a dick! God damn it! Oh, I'm so sorry,
when
everyone.
You go longer.
I'm so sorry,
when you
everyone.
Ruin
this
it.
This is some bullshit. I wasn't it ruining it. I was making it less
longer.
Shit.
Suck it. We will catch you next week.